Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the DFO Rundown Podcast with Frank Saravalli and Jason Greger on dailyfaceoff.com. Delivered by DoorDash.
Welcome to episode 119 of the DFO Rundown. I'm Jason Greger. Welcome in Frank Saravalli from lovely Philadelphia. And we are into the final few weeks of the season, Frank. And, you know, lots happening over this past weekend. Let's start with the one playoff race for a playoff spot involving Vegas and LA, and LA losing yesterday. They are now, they got 8 games. Vegas has 9. And if Vegas wins their game in hand, then they'll technically be in the playoffs because they have more regulation wins. You look at their schedules down the stretch. Vegas does have a tougher schedule as far as opponents. If you look at quality, LA only plays one playoff team down the stretch, but it looks like the injuries to the Kings defense have slowly started to catch up to them.
Man, it's a swoon at the exact wrong time for the LA Kings, who maybe like 2-3 weeks ago seemed to have this playoff spot all but locked up. And it's not just the injuries. They've also, I mean, they've really lost some tough games as they've, you know, appeared to get some more guys back. And you think, okay, maybe the worst of it's over. Yeah, I don't. They've opened the door wide open for the Vegas Golden Knights. The Golden Knights have gotten a bit of a gift here in terms of that opening.
Oh yeah, no question. Now, as I mentioned, the Kings, they play in Chicago. Like, to me, that game in Chicago is bordering on a must win because they play the next night in Colorado, and I would say that's going to be a loss for sure. So you know, you've got a game in Chicago, you got a home and away with them, you got a home and away with the Ducks, you got Seattle, Vancouver, and Columbus as the other 7 games, and then the Colorado one is the one I look at as kind of like a scheduled loss, if you want, second of back to back. And you know, I just saw the Avs and the Oilers play one of the more entertaining 1-1 regulation games I've seen in a long time. And the Avs are really good, and they don't even have Landeskog yet. So I was going to say,
keep in mind too, and we saw this with the NBA over the weekend, the Avs don't really have a lot to play for. So, you know, not to say that they're going to throw in the towel, but there's not a big push for them to keep grinding it out, especially the later we go. They're probably at some point going to take their foot off the gas. I'd imagine at some point they rest a few guys, maybe not as soon as this week, but I'd imagine at some point soon. I mean, that's the other thing about the Kings. You mentioned the schedule. It's pretty favorable in terms of matchups. They just went through the toughest stretch, and obviously it didn't work out great for them. Edmonton, Calgary, there's the one game against Winnipeg in there that they won. Calgary, Edmonton, Mini, like that's not an easy stretch. Those are all the playoff teams in the West, but Chicago, Columbus, Anaheim, Chicago, Anaheim, Seattle, Vancouver, then you add in the Colorado game. It's a pretty winnable stretch if the Kings are going to play their way in.
And yeah, exactly. And then you look at the one game that's big would be because the Kings and the Golden Knights, unfortunately, don't play each other down the stretch. But Edmonton hosts Vegas this Saturday in the afternoon. And, you know, the Oilers, they don't have second officially locked up, but they're pretty darn close in my books. They go 4-5-1. Vegas has to go like 8-1 to catch them. And so I don't see that happening. I look at the Edmonton game. You know, if you're the Oilers right now, I still think you'd rather take on LA than Vegas. So you could do yourself a favor and help the Kings if you can beat Vegas on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, and it's kind of an amazing run for the Oilers, how good they've been the last 6-8 weeks. I mean, I guess really since the coaching change, but to have second locked up in the division, you know, we were talking for a while, is, you know, are they going to make it? Are they going to be in? And then now they're going to have home ice.
Yeah, and really, it's funny, even like the 10 days before, from January 22nd, when they came off, they had a lengthy break, COVID, they didn't play. I think they played two games in 18 days or something. And then since that January 22nd mark, the Oilers have been like a top five team in the NHL. And then under Woodcroft, they're like a top four team. So they've definitely played well. You know, it's I don't know who their starting goalie is, and maybe it doesn't matter right now. Both are, you know, their team defense is infinitely better, and both of them are playing better. So that helps. So, you know, Edmonton, I think whether it's Vegas or LA, the key about Vegas, Frank, and we've talked about this all year, and I know you're a fan of chaos. If Vegas makes the playoffs, that's when the chaos is going to begin, because maybe Mark Stone returns. Right. And that's going to be the big conversation piece here around Vegas, is if they grind it and then they get in and then magically Stone is ready for opening night, you know, there's going to be many GMs around the league yelling bloody murder.
Yeah. I'm just not convinced of a lot of there's a lot that needs to happen. There's a lot of ifs, if the first if is getting in. I still think LA gets that final spot. And I think the wild card gets sorted out with the two teams from the Central. That's what the math indicates. So then if they get in and knock out LA, well, I'm not entirely convinced that Stone is going to be ready to go. I think they're really concerned about Stone being ready to go.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you know what? Honestly, that'd probably be better for them. From an optic standpoint, from an on ice standpoint, obviously
I don't think you care about optics at this point.
Yeah.
They
don't.
The cat's out of the bag. Like we know what the plan is. Now the question is, are they going to be able to execute it?
Yeah.
And when you get in, finally, if you do get in after an insane grind of a season and Mark Stone is healthy, of course you're putting him in 100%.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I don't doubt it. No question.
Yeah, I don't think they care at all about optics.
Yeah, well, I wonder if the NHL, does that encourage them to try to somehow close that loophole and make a salary cap for the playoffs?
I don't think so. I mean, I think that there's concern. I think they would like to. I know, half the league's general managers would like to. I don't think they want to give anything up in order to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's such a unique one where it actually benefits the players too. But the other teams here, as we look quickly, you know, the Carolina Rangers, that's a race. And yeah. They actually, Frank, the good news about that, if you like races, they actually play each other twice in their final nine games. Right now, neither one of them has, you know, their schedules. I looked, it's Carolina has three playoff teams. The Rangers have four. So I don't think it's any clear advantage. Obviously, Carolina has a 2-point advantage right now. But Carolina has basically been in first all season long, and the Rangers. And I think the biggest positive for the Rangers in this is Shesterkin hasn't had to have a 940 save percentage, and they're still winning. That is the biggest upgrade on that team.
He hasn't had that, and they've been winning, which is, as you said, maybe the best sign, maybe that they're hitting it at the right time. I think the edge still goes to Carolina just a little bit. It is interesting, though, that they're kind of hitting their one. They've arguably been the most consistent team in the East outside of Florida, certainly in the Metro. There's been no roller coaster, no dip for them. And the Canes in this last 10 days or so have hit a little bit of a wall. I don't know if it's, you know, late season swoon or what, but, you know, certainly not the time you want to be having it. You want to hit the playoffs firing on all cylinders. And I wonder about the Pittsburgh Penguins, who have gone a while or went a while between wins. And, you know, obviously they're a clear playoff team. The question is, can they do any damage once they get in, and how quickly will that series with the New York Rangers be over?
Yeah, the Penguins, if you look, Frank, in the last 10 games, you look at really the cutoff of non-playoff teams to playoff teams. The Penguins are the only playoff bound team right now that's under 500 over the last 10 games. And like even Carolina, they're 5-3-2. You know, the Kings are 4-4-2. So they're still at 500, but 3-6-1 for the Penguins. And, you know, that some might say that's irrelevant and it doesn't matter. And there's some cases to show that that's true. But I do think this year when it's so competitive and there's not huge margins, like outside of maybe Florida, Washington, I'm not sure there's a first round series in the East that you say, well, this is a clear advantage for any team.
Well, I would go to Rangers over Penguins right now, too.
Yeah, you think a clear advantage?
I think so. Yeah, I mean, they could end up finishing 8 points ahead of them. And it's not necessarily the points. It's also the style points. You know, a lot of people have been asking, can the Rangers play a playoff style hockey? How will that translate given their reliance on Shesterkin? I think we've seen a little bit of an answer to that in the last few weeks. And I just don't know that Pittsburgh has the goods to go on a long run.
Yeah, no, that's fair. That's, you know, the Rangers, you know, they made those subtle little additions at the trade deadline that have definitely helped them defensively. I don't think there's much question about that. And, you know, it's fun. The other race, of course, in the Central is Minnesota, St. Louis for home ice advantage. That's going to be a quite a fun race to watch down the stretch. And then we mentioned the LA one. What do you make of, we see Owen Power, well, basically Michigan. You know, you got a lot of these guys that from Michigan, their season's over, and then now they're signing with teams. Do you think teams like burning a year of the entry-level contract right away? Because if a guy doesn't have a great first few years, well, then that could help you. But if he does, well, then you're paying a huge ticket even quicker than, you know, you don't even get three full seasons out of it. And there's going to be three of those guys in the next week all starting their NHL contracts down the stretch for basically 10 games.
Yeah, I don't see any issue with it. I mean, I don't think, well, I think with Owen Power, it's a little bit different than most. But I think some of these teams are just concerned about getting these guys out of school. They've seen, you know, and I don't think, you know, with some of these top end guys, Power, Beniers, you know, I would include Bobby Brink in this category, having led the NCAA in scoring this year, winning a national title. You know, you don't want to see your guy getting close to that fourth year and all of a sudden having leverage over you. You want to get that guy out of school as quickly as you can, I think. And having had one extra year of sort of incubation of development, a chance to grow, I think is a positive for everyone. You know, I think for whatever reason, we saw a string of a number of NHL players that were top picks that came right out of either school or junior, and they probably could have benefited from an extra year. And it was nice to see Power go down that path. I think everyone could look on the outside and see Buffalo was going to struggle for a stretch this season. And now think about the way this year has gone for the Sabres. You know, they started off okay and then were just god awful for a long stretch. And now this last month, they've sort of been ramping up under Don Granato. And you inject a guy like Owen Power into your lineup, and then all of a sudden the energy changes, the feel is different. And you can get Power a little bit accustomed to what it's like in the NHL so that he hits the ground running in September and October and feels really good and confident. And then the other part is you now have your work cut out for you this summer if you're the Sabres and trying to find a partner to play with Owen Power, someone who's likely a vet that can provide some comfort on the blue line.
Now, as I'm speaking, I'm wondering, Owen Power, they only got 8 games left. Doesn't he have to play 9 games to burn the first year of his entry level contract? Now that I say that out loud. So now I'm questioning myself. I don't know if he'll burn his first year because they only got 8 games remaining. And so, you know, now Seattle and Columbus, though, Columbus has 9. And so with Ken Johnson, if he plays all
his
9.
His birthday is November 22nd. And the way it works when
so signing the time he signed.
Yeah. It's the age of the year you turn and in the year you sign it. So he signed his deal in 2022. He turns 20 in 2022. Therefore he's 20 and he's no longer slide eligible. So just putting pen to paper on the contract is actually what burned the first year of the deal.
Now is John. Now I don't know, Johnson and Beniers, are they in the same boat? Or if you keep them under 9, like 9 and under, then you don't burn it.
No, Beniers is 20.
Okay.
Johnson, I got to find him. Johnson did sign. Johnson is 20.
Okay, so they're
Bobby
all
Brink is okay. 20. Yeah, they're all 20.
Yeah,
Bobby Brink's more than 20.
Yeah, I look at the Denver guys, and
I don't think I don't think you worry about it. I think the comfort of getting those guys in is you worry about that down the line.
It's an advantage, is all I'm saying. Like if you can have a guy for 3 years on his entry level deal. Now those teams, maybe it's different because, you know, unless they have a massive turnaround, they're not, you know, they're capped, they're not contending for the cup, so it's maybe irrelevant. But if you're a cup contending team, when you can have a guy for 1 year in the last year of his entry level deal, Frank, and he's outperforming it significantly, you know, well, that's obviously a huge advantage. So
yeah, the problem is the cup contending teams largely don't have lottery picks or high end prospects that are making the jump.
No, right? But you had guys like Tampa Bay had Braden Point, right? Like, you know what I mean? You can get some guys that can come in and be excellent for you in that last year of the entry level deal. Like, look when they had Sergachev and Cernak and those type of guys, right? That were playing big minutes for your team on low contracts, which is
right. But the point is they were not high level, highly touted prospects. Point was a third round pick.
Well, Sergachev.
That's what I'm saying. Those guys don't.
Sergachev was top 10.
Yeah, but that was a trade.
Yeah, but he's still top 10. They traded a top 10 pick.
But it had nothing to do with burning the year. He was already in the NHL when they traded for him.
Yeah, no, I know. But I'm just suggesting the point is when you have 3 years, he was still on his third year of his entry level deal, right? So that third year is where there's a chance that they can be more. Like to me, I look at Owen Power might be, but is Kent Johnson and Beniers next year going to be impact players in your eyes?
I think so.
Impact. You think impact?
Yep. Yeah, I think Matty Beniers for sure. Kent Johnson, I think it'll depend on how they surround him. But I mean, you take a look at the Blue Jackets this year. And, you know, when I look at their lineup, like, I don't know, I think Cole Sillinger did just fine in any, you know, normal season without a Moritz Seider or Lucas Raymond or one of these guys going off. I mean, Cole Sillinger for being an 18-year-old stepping into the league and having 12 goals, 12 assists. Like, I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
No, I never said wrong. I said impact. There's a bit like there's guys who play and they help your team, but I'm talking like being like a legit, like Austin Matthews, impact player, 40 goals as a rookie. That's what I mean.
I don't think 40 goals, but I think Owen Power can be right away an impact defenseman. I think Matty Beniers, he can be a solid producer. I believe that. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, I just look at like, you know, to me, there's complementary forwards. There's nothing wrong with that. As I said, Owen Power, I think, is the one guy who might be able to do it. The others would be what I would consider more complementary players, which is fine. There's very, very few players who come in the NHL and are impact guys right away.
That's I just think like someone like Kent Johnson, he's so highly skilled. He's going to give you a shot in the arm right away. There's flair, there's flash, there's dash. There's all those things that are part of his game that I think a lot of people are curious how it'll translate. Like he's been able to do a lot of that in college. And I think, you know, people are wondering what that looks like at the NHL level. Beniers is, I don't know. Beniers is he's a great player. He's going to be so good.
Yeah. Well, and I guess my example is most people thought Cole Caulfield was going to build off the playoffs last year and just be dynamic. And it took him kind of 4 months to find his ground. Cause the NHL, man, as you know, Frank, the NHL is very difficult and it can chew up some young guys. It's a hard league to learn. I have no doubt that I think in their careers at some point, they'll be impact players, just maybe not right away.
Cole Caulfield coaching change, still going to hit 20 some goals.
Yeah. No, it helps him for sure. But like people thought like Frank, everybody's called, he's going to score 35 this year. Right. Like that's, I just think sometimes the expectations on rookies are too high. So I always try to temper it for a lot of people, because then you're not as disappointed, because if you come in with high expectations of a player, the player might still play fine, but you had unrealistic expectations. So I always try to tell fans to temper their expectations for rookies, because it's very rare that you see a rookie come in. Doesn't matter how highly touted they are. I don't care if they're first round, first overall or 10th, whatever. There's just very few that come in and live up to some of the overhyped expectations.
Fair.
Speaking of overhyped right now, he's not Austin Matthews. I would say this. I think today, Austin Matthews, I think he might be more favored for the Lindsay than the Hart, because the awards are different, right? The awards are different. Where do you come out? Do you think he's favored more in one or the other, or is it still wide open?
I think this is your hot take of the day. I would say, I think it's open for both. I was going to say, I think he's more favored for the Hart, but I don't know. I'd love to know what players think about Connor McDavid. Like, no one, again, no one's talking about him. He's still only leading the league in points.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think players universally, more or less, think he's the best player in the game.
Well, that's 100% agreed. But for this year, if Austin Matthews scores 65 goals, Frank, which he's on pace to do,
Wins both, doesn't he?
Yeah, he might. The Roman Josi, Huberdeau, you know, I think Roman Josi's the one, because Roman Josi could do something, Frank, that no player's ever done. Like, other guys have scored 65. Ovechkin did it in 2008. No defenseman in the history of the NHL has scored 100 points without a teammate, when a teammate didn't also have 100 points. Right? Like, you look at Orr, he had Esposito. One year he had three forwards score 100 points with him. Mm-hmm. in Hodge, Busek, and Esposito. Coffey, of course, had Gretzky and Curry and Messier and Anderson in different years, and then Lemieux in Pittsburgh. Brian Leetch had Mark Messier. Al MacInnis had Theron Fleury. Dennis Potvin had Trotsche and Bossy. Roman Josi has Matt Duchene and Forsberg, and they might get to 80 points. So to me, when I'm looking at a defenseman doing something that no one in the history of the game has ever done, that's pretty hard to overlook for the Hart Trophy.
I don't think Roman Josi's the favorite.
Yeah, well, I'm not saying he's a favorite because he doesn't have it yet, but.
Yeah, I think Roman Josi's in like the kind of 3-5 spot on the ballot.
Hmm. Now, why is that?
That's just kind of how I'm mapping it out in my own brain at the moment. Yeah. It's incredibly impressive. There's no doubt. I feel like we're overlooking and discounting a fantastic McDavid season again for what?
Oh, I'm not discounting. I'm just
not you. I'm just saying in general, it's almost like people have fatigue. Like, oh, Connor McDavid's been awesome again. Let's yawn. I mean, that's really how it feels. Doesn't it? Like, true. He does something ridiculous and everyone's like, oh, just McDavid being McDavid.
Yeah, no, that's fair, right? Like, he's going to set a career high in points this year. Not points per game, but definitely points, because last year was crazy. And I do think, Frank, that some people will look at what he did last year.
He has an outside shot at 50, by the way.
Oh, I know. I think he's going to, I wrote the other day, I think he gets 50, because 50 goals for the elite players, that's significant, right? Like, the other thing, what about Alex Ovechkin? Now, he's not going to win any awards, but he needs 5 goals down the stretch here for Washington in his final 10 games to reach 50 for the 9th time.
Yeah, like he's heated up a bit in the last couple of weeks again.
Yeah. Oh,
I figured he would, but
he wants it. Yeah. And as he should. Like, awesome. Like, there's an outside chance the NHL could have 6-7 50 goal scores, which is awesome. Like, offense is up. It's the highest we've seen since 1996 overall offense in the league.
He's got 16 goals in his last 22 games.
Yeah.
Oh, last 17.
I think he gets to 50. And, you know, as do I think McDavid. I think McDavid goes on a run. He needs 8-9, which is obviously a little harder than 5-10. But
yeah, but when you get one hat trick, it makes life pretty easy.
Yeah. So, but no, it's funny about, I think the players, because people always say, well, I've heard suggestions. Well, you know, everybody's going to have different opinion. I think your fatigue thing might be fair, Frank, but keep in mind that even worked for the players. But when Wayne Gretzky set the all-time NHL record of 215 points, he didn't win the 10 Lindsay. He won the Hart. He didn't win the 10 Lindsay. Mary Lemieux won it, and he had 141 points.
But how many fewer games?
Oh, like 6.
Oh.
Like, Gretzky outscored him 215 to 141. Like, think about that. 74 more points.
Hmm.
And he didn't win. And now, he had scored 200 points prior, so I think your point might be
valid. He also did it on an awful Pittsburgh team.
True.
Awful.
But the question was, who was the best player? He had 60-some
more points than his next closest teammate.
Yeah, but look at Gretzky. Didn't Gretzky have 70 or 80 more than his teammate?
Mm-hmm. But he did it on the defending champs.
Yeah, right. But it just, that's to your point. You're yawning.
It comes back to fatigue, I think, right?
Yeah. So, but that was the player. So it might happen for McDavid. I also think some people look and say, well, you've got, you know, two of the top three leading scorers in the same team. Does that hurt each other? Right. It all depends how you vote. As I've always said, the vote for me is fascinating, but I think Roman Josi should be up higher because he's doing something that he could do something that no other player in NHL history has ever done.
Okay. So let's do a quick ballot check. Give me your top five. And not giving you mine because I don't have it yet. But where do you slot it right now?
Well, I haven't looked at it. I would say this though, because we talked about there's seven guys. Shesterkin's not going to be in my top five because he hasn't played enough games.
He's not in my seven.
Yeah. So there's Kaprizov, Gaudreau, Huberto, Matthews, Josi, McDavid. I think those are the top six. Draisaitl's had a really good year.
I was going to say, I didn't hear a Draisaitl on there.
He probably will finish seventh. That would be my guess today.
And what's your reasoning? I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just, this is the fascinating part of it is.
Well, I think.
Draisaitl is going to have 50 and 100 points. And we talked about how significant that stat is.
Oh, it's very significant. Because I look at the wording of the rule is what I'm focusing on.
You're a literal voter.
Yeah. If I'm working on who's had the best seasons, well, then it's a totally different conversation. Right. Just who's been the best player. That's a very different conversation to me. I'm going based on, and that doesn't mean that I love the wording of the book. I just take it. That's my job as a voter is to take it verbatim and look, okay, who's most valuable to your team. So I'm looking at quality of competition. I'm looking at all, I don't just factor in 5-on-5 either. I think it's ridiculous that people discount power play or guys who are really good penalty killers. Right. So I have it probably six guys. I couldn't say in order, but the more I look into Roman Josi's usage, the more I say I can't overlook the guy is all. Like he plays way more minutes than anyone else. Right. He's on a team where he's the leader offensively as a defenseman. And he's pushing for 100 points, even if he gets to like he'll be the ninth guy ever to get 90 points. So you're doing something that very few players in the history have ever done. No one's done it in the last 30 years. So that to me makes it a really great season.
And he's still got some work to do to get to 100 points, by the way.
No, 100's hard, but even 90, Frank, that's only nine guys who've ever done 90.
And what if he doesn't get to 100 points? Does it change the view at all?
If he gets to 96, I could use my rule and say he's the first defenseman at 96 points where he didn't have a teammate with 100. You know what I mean? Like it's not really going to alter it that much. I think some people look at the milestone, like if he ends up with 98 points because he didn't get 100, is it significantly that different? Like if Matthews only gets 63 instead of 65, is it clearly that much different? I don't think so.
Mm-hmm. He's on track for 99.4. So yeah. It'll be very close.
Yeah. I have to look at the Preds sked to see if he has a few games against teams that have been weak defensively, right? Like yesterday, it's funny now, like Josi didn't get a point yesterday. I'm like, oh, geez, that's going to be hard for him to get 100 because now he's just slightly on pace for underneath. But the fact that he's even on pace for that, Frank, is amazing to me. So I can't overlook that. But at the same time, what Matthews has done is unique. Jonathan Huberto set an NHL record by left wingers. So the thing that's great about it is there's so many players having really good seasons that whoever wins is going to, not that you're never deserving of it, but there's no clear cut winner. I think that makes it almost more important, you know, to the person who does win because there's like, man, there was a lot of really good options this year.
Yeah. Can I offer a quick word about Austin Matthews? For whatever reason, it went quasi viral over the weekend. I was getting a lot of mentions and tweets from people where they were playing a clip from February 2021 on the Rundown when we were talking about Austin Matthews in last year's shortened season, and people were going crazy right off the hop. Do you remember this? They were saying, "Oh, can he get to 50 goals last year?" And I was like, stop it. Like, please, 50 goals in 56 games. Like it's not going to happen. But the point was I said the clip about last season and it didn't happen. So people were saying, I was getting tweets. When are you going to apologize? And I guess in picking Austin Matthews to score 62 goals this season, people thought that I was shorting him or somehow I'm not a believer in Austin Matthews and his goal scoring magic. I am. I was just saying last season, I didn't think it was going to happen.
And Frank, the internet, trust me, if someone's not
the internet remains enough, undefeated, didn't you know?
But if they're not smart enough to understand the timestamp.
No, they understood something. That's the best part. I explained it and they were still like, when are you going to apologize?
Apologize for what?
I wanted to mention, I think Austin Matthews is special. I just wanted to make everyone feel good.
He is unreal, man. Like, he's the best shooter in the game right now today.
I never thought we'd see 50 goals in 50 games again.
Yeah. Well,
I know it's an unofficial. It doesn't matter. Yeah. It doesn't matter. The fact that any player at any point in any stretch has scored 50 goals in any 50 game stretch in today's NHL is absolutely insane.
So here's my question. Why do you think offense is up so much this season? What's changed?
I have no idea.
Because here's a stat for you, Frank. In 2006, when everyone was like, oh, there was so much offense, right? And everyone's like, oh, we're seeing all these 6-5 games.
It was all power play.
Teams were averaging twice as many power play opportunities per game. Yeah. It was 6 per team. Now it's 3. Right? Like that. And the thing that I laugh about is people like, well, I don't want 6-5 games. Well, first of all, the league's never been 6-5 games. Ever. Now, there's been some, but never averaging 6-5 games. Even in the heyday of the 80s, it was only an average of 8 goals per game. And a lot of that came from the Edmonton Oilers. If you look at how many more goals the Oilers scored some years than everybody else, that really increased the league average significantly. Because you got to remember, it's a 21-team league. I'm just kind of curious.
We have 50 guys that are at a point per game or better.
I know. So I
feel like an old man, but I'm old enough to remember Jamie Benn a few years back thinking like, is this the new normal? 86 points led the league.
Yep. Wasn't fun.
87 points. Sorry. 2015, 87 points. I'm like, is this how it's going to be from now on?
No. Well, all I know is I applaud it. And I hope that the league and everyone recognizes scoring is up. So I don't want to hear this garbage excuse. Nah, no one wants to watch 6-5 games. There's a few more of them. And yes, they do in the course of an 82 game season. So I applaud the players that are producing more overall than we've seen in decades. And I just hope it continues because you know what's funny, Frank? From 96 to 97, the drop in offense was awful. Like it fell off a cliff and I don't know what the NHL did, but whatever they did to change it that summer, do not do it again. I repeat, do not do it again. I hope if anything, you know, this year we're averaging, you know, and sorry, Hockey Reference. Cause people are like, well, your numbers are off. No, Hockey Reference includes shootout goals. And I don't, cause shootout goals don't count in the actual standings of anybody. So what's your
working theory? Why is it? My working theory is that we've gone through so many iterations in the rule book where there's been a crackdown on slashing. There's been a crackdown on cross-checking. There's been a crackdown on hooking. And it's been gradual. It seems like they've picked one rule every year. You remember how much we talked about cross-checking at the start of the season and how this would be a point of emphasis? Well, the NHL said at the GM meetings a few weeks back that cross-checking calls aren't up because players adjusted to the standard so quickly. I think my working theory as it relates to goals is that the game is being played more cleanly than it ever has been.
Yeah, that's fair.
To give credence to what Bernie Nichols said on Friday, because I think some of his points were pretty debatable about it being easier to get to the net and score. I do think there's something to the idea of that. Just it's not space, but it's just a little bit when you're being hassled less, obviously it's going to be easier to make plays.
Oh, go watch the hooking and the holding that was allowed in the 80s, even though it was high scoring. Go back and watch.
Go watch in 2002 and 3. Yep. Like it wasn't that long ago.
Yep.
But you know, you look at today's game, it feels like it's totally different. And I think I'd have to think that that's the only reason. Like, I can't come up with another plausible.
Well, you know, here's my other reason, Frank. Players have gotten skills coaches the last 6 years. For the longest time, you had goalie coaches, and the goalies had all their coaches, especially in the summertime, right? And they still do. Players never did. And it's only, you know, you've got Adam Oates, who we had on the show. You have other skills coaches, and the best players in the world are using them. And now second tier and third tier guys are as well. And so these players, the goalies are still good, but you look at some of the, like, people are, oh, that's a bad goal by the goalie. When the guy puts it in like a 2-inch window, I'm like, that's not a bad goal. That's the only place the guy had to shoot. And the players have worked on this stuff so much more now. I think the introduction of skills coaches has allowed players to finish more plays.
How about also coaches giving players room to be creative? I think that has something to do with it too. That, not to say that systems have taken a back seat, but I feel like players have more license now than they did previously.
Yeah, that, you know what? That'd be a great question for coaches, right? Like guys who, like John Cooper, and guys who, you know, Gerard Gallant, who by the way, wherever he coaches, they win. Just point that out. Vegas, man, you look at some of the guys Vegas got rid of, Gallant and Fleury, and you're just like, whew, not sure this is necessarily the best, because look at Gerard Gallant.
This was a karma season.
Yeah, like Gallant, no one can tell me Gerard Gallant isn't a good coach, because all the numbers will refute that. Like, comes in now, New York had some guys go in the right direction, sure, but not this good. And I know Shesterkin, but the last 10, 15 games have shown that they can still win without Shesterkin at a 940.
They got the Gallant bump.
Yeah, he's been excellent. So, but it's just, I just want to say this, Frank, I think it's important to point out that offense is up. No one's complaining about it. And you know what? If we have more 50-goal guys and more players averaging a point a game, that's how the game can market itself better. Fans know who their guy, like, more teams have offensive guys now. That's better for the fan base. No fan base wants to have their leading scorer with 45 or 50 points. Like, it's brutal.
Right. So here's my big question. How much will it change when we get to the playoffs?
Well, I got to go my back guess and is I'll look at the playoffs that are- score.
Yeah, my guess is the teams that are eliminated early are going to be rooted out by their lack of defense.
Maybe. It'll be fun to see.
I mean, you might be able to outscore your issues for one round. Do you think you can really win three?
Not necessarily, but look at the teams that are scoring. It's not like they're, you know, the gap. Oh, the other thing, Frank, I think the gap right now between the haves and the have-nots is bigger than we've seen in a long time. That's the other thing right now.
True.
And that's showing itself in the regular season. There's a bigger gap between the playoff teams and the non-playoff teams. You look at the bottom 10 teams in the NHL, they're not even close.
Right.
They're not even close. And sucks for those fan bases, because I'm not sure that they can close that gap in one offseason very quickly. I
thought this was a parity-driven league.
Yeah, no. Funny enough, Frank, it isn't, but there's more offense. Let's bring in Tyler Yaremchuk on a Monday. Ty, how you doing? Mm-hmm.
I am doing fantastic. It was a great weekend to be a sports fan. There was a lot of stuff going on. So
Did you guys bet what I told you to bet? Scotty Scheffler, boom.
Did you make any money? Scheffler.
Yeah, I did, but I didn't bet enough. God.
It's the way it always is.
But it's still, hey, you know what? I still made some, but of course, in hindsight, when you pick something, I should have put more than I did, but that's okay.
I told Tyler I got absolutely murdered by Cam Smith on Sunday.
I had an okay day, but my girlfriend is super into golf. So she plays DraftKings whenever there's a big tournament. She did a $3 entry and won $1,000 US off it. So I am not paying my share of the rent.
She must have had Rory. What a Sunday for Rory. Oh,
Rory was lights out. Like, it was a great tournament. I know Scheffler kind of ended up running away with it a little, so there wasn't a lot of drama. But yeah, watching Rory do what he did on Sunday was awesome. Good Canadian boy Corey Connors was kind of in the mix
I hate Rory so much.
You're an anti-Rory guy?
No, I had a head-to-head matchup, Morikawa and McIlroy on Sunday, and I took Morikawa, who also had a pretty good day. Yeah,
great Sunday.
And so I obviously lost the head-to-head, but then I had Cam Smith to finish second, and I felt really good about it on the eighth hole when he had a three or four shot lead. And then I actually felt again pretty good after that birdie at 11. And as soon as he put the ball in the water on 12 and just absolutely self-destructed, I was like, it's over. As Rory is like roaring up the back nine and ends the day with that ridiculous birdie on 18. I was like, oh, what an idiot.
It looked like he forgot how to celebrate when he chipped that one in from the bunker. Like, I don't know what he was doing with his hands.
He threw his club
and his hands were just kind of like outstretched, and he was like, whoa, it was hilarious. All right, let's get into buy or sell. It's delivered by our friends at DoorDash. Promo code RUNDOWNDD gets you 25% off and no delivery fees on your first order. This first one, I saw a Flames fan on Twitter saying that Elias Lindholm is not getting enough love for the quality of season that he's having. And I looked into it. This guy's tied for eighth in even strength goals this year. He's very well probably going to score 40 on the season. He's second in plus minus, which I know isn't a great stat, but I dug into some of the fancier numbers as well. He's having a just sensational year, and I feel like he's not getting enough love. So my buy or sell question is this. If there was an award for the most underrated player in any season, I think Lindholm would win this season. Buy or sell, Frank?
Sell. He was number one on my heart, on my Selke trophy ballot.
Really?
Yes.
Interesting.
Yeah, I would sell as well. Like, he's been getting a lot of love for the Selke, as he should be. So no, I wouldn't go for him.
There you go.
He's had a good year because I think he's going to be a Selke finalist.
Yeah. And I don't know. I hate the underrated question.
You hate it. You rolled your eyes as soon as I said it. And I knew you wouldn't like it.
Well, he's a good player. Like, what's underrated? Like, people have been talking about him all year long.
I saw the Flames Nation thread about it, and I figured I'd ask you guys. Number two, Jack Hughes, out for the rest of the season, obviously. But looking back on his year, it was a breakout season for Hughes. And I remember the conversations we were having at the beginning of the year when the Devils signed him to that $8 million deal. And we were all kind of saying, like, probably not worth it. I'm going to go ahead and say that by the end of next season, the Jack Hughes contract is going to be one of the best values in the entire NHL. Buy or sell on that, Jason?
Well, see, to me, I always said, why'd you have to sign him at that point? Because now at the end of the season's over, he's not playing anymore. What he's done this year, would he have earned more? Would he all of a sudden be like, wow, we got to get this guy more than 8 million? So to me, it was always the timing of the contract. But number two, is he going to be that to be really good value? He's got to be an 85 point guy. Can Jack Hughes stay healthy? Right now, you know what? That's going to be the question. Can he stay healthy? He's missed a lot. What's he going to miss this season at the end? 33 games, mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
He missed 21 games, or I guess no, shortened season. So 10 games his rookie year. When he's playing, I think he can be a point of game player. But nowadays, as Frank just pointed out, there's 50 guys point of game players. Is that automatically worth 8 mil when you got 44 goals? No, I don't think he'll be one of the best value contracts next year. He'll probably be good, but it won't be a great value.
I think it's going to take a few years, maybe three years probably, to really be a value deal. And that brings us back to the question, which was, why'd you sign him then? That's what I have no issue with the contract, because I think ultimately he's going to get there and it will be a value at some point. It's just, could you have bridged him and enjoyed even more value for these next couple seasons? It may have cost you a little bit more down the line, but I still don't understand why now. Like, why did that contract get signed two games into the season? Had he finished this year and done exactly what he did, it still would probably not have cost you 8x8.
Because I look at value, guys. If we're going based on value, Leon Draisaitl is 8.5 million. He won a Hart, right? He won a Ted Lindsay. He scored 50 goals twice. He scored 100 points three times. That's value. So is Jack Hughes going to be a 50 goal, 100 point guy? If we're talking value, that's a pretty big ask.
Yeah, that is fair to get to that value threshold. I was curious to see if after a season, your opinions had changed on the deal, and it has not. Third one I got for a lot of talk, Austin Matthews. Could he potentially hit 65 goals this year? What about the 70 goal mark? Will Austin Matthews ever have a 70 goal season in his career? Would you buy or sell on that idea, Gregor?
Well, when I look at the numbers, you would have asked me 2 years ago, I don't think 70 goals was possible, right? And keep in mind, Ovechkin, who's one of the greatest goal scorers ever seen, never got 70, mm-hmm. Right? But offense is up. And if offense continues to go and you combine that with the talent level of Austin Matthews, to me, the only thing that'll hold him back from 70 is can he stay healthy and not miss a few games? Because even missing four games can be the difference between a 68 and a 70 goal season. So yeah. I love offense. So I'm going to pick it because I really want to see someone score 70 goals. I don't think it's going to be this year. That's a huge ask to do down the stretch. But I think it's very plausible moving forward as long as offense across the league continues to be where it's at.
I'm going to sell. I'm just doing the math as you were talking.
Yeah.
So like he's a these last two seasons, he's been scoring at 0.82 goals per game. That's if he stays healthy and plays all 82 at that pace, it's 67.
Yeah.
How much higher really can he go? Like, look, I get that this run has been unbelievable. To be north of a goal a game, it's insane. But he did have that stretch to start the year where he didn't, right? So don't you think at some point that will pop up again? Like, it has to happen again, right? He had 5 in his first 11, like one stretch like that. That sinks you from getting to 70.
Here's the one area where I think Austin Matthews can improve. Ooh. And he's taken signs and steps this year, but he could have like an elite power play season. And he's never done that. Oh. Right. Like this year, he's 5th in power play goals. So it's obviously much better than he was in the past, but he's never really been a dominant power play. And it's funny because people try to downplay that. I'll argue the opposite. If you're an elite goal scorer, you're an elite goal scorer in every situation. And that's the one small criticism, if there's going to be one, to say Matthews can be a 20 plus power play goal guy. And if he does that, Frank, then I think he's got a chance to push for 70. Because I think to be a 70 goal guy, you probably have to have 20 plus power play goals for sure. If you look at the history of all the guys, they did it guaranteed.
I was going to say, I actually look at it kind of the opposite way, and that what he's done at even strength is so insanely ridiculous. He has an outside shot at hitting 50 even strength goals this year.
Yeah. 50. Well, I know that. That's my point. If he becomes as dominant on the power play, which in theory he should.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Austin Matthews with those 15 power play goals is tied for 4th with Alex Ovechkin and Josh Norris this season. Chris Kreider leads the way with 25. Wrapping up with our points bet bonus question. Points bet Canada is live in Ontario and they got an app. Go give it a download. There's a nice welcome bonus there as well. The odds are up on points bet to win the President's Trophy this season. Right now, the Avs are the favorites at minus 278. The Panthers are 2 points behind them, and the Panthers are plus 200. Do you think there's a chance, buy or sell, on the Panthers catching the Avs for that top spot for the President's Trophy? You mentioned the Avs might take their foot off the gas a little bit down the stretch here. Maybe the Panthers won't. The small gap to close plus 200. I like the odds, but are you buying or selling? Can the Avs be caught for the President's Trophy, Frank?
Can they be? Yes. Will they be? I don't know what. So the Panthers are plus what?
200. 2-1.
I don't know that I'd be willing to bet in order to see it.
Fair.
See, I kind of like those odds, right? But the thing is, Colorado has a tiebreaker. So it's really 3 points. Right. Because they've got 4 more regulation wins than the Panthers. So, you know, let's say the Avs go 6-4. Well, then the Panthers got to get 15 points. So they got to go 7-2-1, which isn't unheard of. But
the Avs are also cruising along at 8-1-1 in their last 10. Like, there's no indication that they go 6-4. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying.
The trouble is, like, I don't see that big of a drop off to the point where Florida can make up that much ground plus one.
Yeah. But it is intriguing. I see why, like, you know, I see why Colorado's so low and they're so high. But I probably would sell and say that Colorado still finishes the top.
Speaking of trophy odds, and I just wanted to throw this out there again. Full disclosure, I cannot wager on trophy awards, the ones that we vote on. And I've made it clear to our membership at the PHWA that you cannot. But I did let my buddies know on the golf course a few weeks ago, hey, that Roman Josi guy plus 350 for the Norris, back when everyone thought Cale Makar had it locked up when we first started talking about Josi and the 100-point season, they're now dead even.
Really?
Josi and Makar, I think they're both, like, I saw on Sunday, minus 106 or minus 110. They're both dead even money. Yep. Damn, crazy. Yeah. Huge swing.
Well, Roman Josi's last 35 games, man, have been unreal. Like, they've been just as impressive, almost like Auston Matthews, because you score the goals, and I get it. But when you're a defenseman and you're averaging almost 2 points a game for 35 games, come on now. Like, that's, you know, we're talking, like, those are Bobby Orr, Paul Coffey like numbers. Yeah. And they were scoring 139.
You're doing it in 2022.
Points. Yeah. I love it.
All right. That's going to do it for another edition of Buy or Sell, delivered by DoorDash.
Frank, before I let you go, underrated player right now, Josh Norris in Ottawa.
Not buying that. I don't know if you read the Daily Faceoff roundtable the other day. It was the question from Matt Larkin was, who's the one player that or team that you believe can keep it going for next season?
And you said Josh Norris.
Late season hot streak is legit. And I will just read you my little quip. Josh Norris of the Ottawa Senators. Not sure how much love Norris has gotten outside of Canada's capital, but I think he's a legitimate star in the making. Since March 1st, Norris is 11th in the league with 12 goals in 17 games, one more than Alex Ovechkin in that span. Don't know that he'll ever be a 50-goal scorer like Ovechkin, but Norris' season has been incredibly impressive. Hit 30 goals and did it in 52 games, centering Brady Tkachuk and Matthew Joseph. Decent preview for next season. And he's won more than his fair share of 800 plus faceoffs and delivered on an impressive 8 game winning goals this season. 8 game winners for Josh Norris.
I know, and I love it because your opening line said that no one maybe outside of Ottawa knows about him, so kind of underrated,
I guess, but not by me.
No, sure, but that's just like how it
Lindholm.
Gets out there.
If you're not noticing Lindholm, I feel you're just not paying attention.
No, Lindholm, I think for sure is a Selke finalist. I think I think he's definitely going to be right in the running there. That line's had a great year. And even Matthew Tkachuk, who was asked the other day about the, you know, oh, your improved defense. He just chuckly goes, well, that's really Lindholm. You know, I'm not sure I'm a great defensive player. Like even he admitted himself that Lindholm's kind of the conscience of that line.
It's going to be a very expensive summer for the Calgary Flames.
Yes.
Matthew Tkachuk, Johnny Gaudreau, a lot of money.
A big week coming up here. We got Rangers and the Capitals are going to meet. Sorry, the Carolina Hurricanes and Rangers are going to meet one of their two times this week. You've got Vegas and Dallas and Nashville all playing meaningful games into that playoff run. The LA Kings, can they plug the leaks? It'll be a fun week to watch as the playoff races continue on and seeding races in the East. And we get to see some of the more recent top picks all making their NHL debuts in Seattle, Columbus, and Buffalo. It'll be a fun week, Frank. We'll talk to you. Actually, we'll talk to you next Monday as happy Good Friday as you're having Friday off.
Thanks for listening to the DFO Rundown with Saravalli and Gregor. Keep it locked on dailyfaceoff.com and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode. Delivered by DoorDash.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.